I will not repeat myself.
Yes, you will.
No, I won't. So I will read now the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And just keep in mind, these are ideas and ideals that we try to embed within our heart and mind. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, to keep alive in Philadelphia and in compliance with our declaration, we hold public meetings, two each week. But they're held in the atmosphere of our wanting something, our wanting to participate in something, and our wanting to find something. We come into these rooms for discovery. That discovery is ourselves. And to do that, these theosophical ideas are kept before the public. Now, on Sunday mornings, we have talks on theosophical subjects, broad-ranging. As this morning, our talk is on Easter, the physical and spiritual rebirth. And then next week is the winged dragon, bird and butterfly. Now, on Wednesday evenings, we have a more structured class where we take up some of the teachings, we read them independently, and then we come together and we discuss them. We review the subject matter for that evening, we summarize it, and then we start discussing it as best we understand. And that's how we learn and grow. By check, testing, and verify ideas that we have against the philosophy. Now, we are presently in the key to theosophy, and I'm not sure what page we're on, but we can find that out when we go to the desk or the book table, and we can find what's going on, and we can find a full spectrum of books, pamphlets, and literature that one needs to peruse and see what grabs our attention. Where do our interests lie? What questions do we have? Are we trying to answer? There's all kinds of books there that will help us in any research or any study we wish to endeavor in. But we must remind everyone that this is a independent devotion to theosophy. But there is nothing that is implied or inferred on your responsibility. Your responsibility is nothing more than what you make it. And the fact that you found your way here is telltale for everyone else in here that you are a seeker after the truth, as we all are. And we come here and we gather to unfold or try to uncover these truths that are really right before us, but we have just forgotten their real nature. And we spend more time in the physical world than we do in the spiritual world. So today we're going to try to build a bridge between that spiritual and that physical world. And this bridge is built through holidays that are these reminders of our universal nature. So this morning we will have a talk on Easter. It's both its physical and its spiritual meaning. So, with no further ado,
today, April 16th, we celebrate Easter, a day full of tradition when we hunt for colored eggs, exchange colored eggs, and even in some parts of the world, give colored eggs as gifts. Isn't it always interesting to discover that many of the customs and festivals that we observe in this day and age, without knowing the reason for their observance, have come down to us from races and civilizations long since dead. It gives us a strange feeling to find that there is indeed nothing new under the sun, and that what we are doing today, other people in other lands did in other times. It makes us realize that if anything is of true importance to men, it must be universal in its expression, whether it be a custom or the celebration of a festival. In this sense, the celebration of Easter with the ceremonies that go with it is a universal festival and consequently gains in its importance because of this fact. We wonder, how many realize that they are actually taking part in or participating in an ancient sacred festival centuries older than the modern Christian celebration, which, by the way, began in the 4th century, around the year 325, to be more exact. During Easter, Christendom observes two events: the crucifixion of Jesus and his resurrection. According to legend, he was crucified on a Friday and he rose from the dead the following Sunday. Easter, therefore, must represent both death and life. If we look at the story of death and resurrection, we find that it is a gross caricature of very old and ancient initiation ceremonies practiced by Egyptians and other civilizations. In these ceremonies, which took place in caves and crypts, temples, the pyramids, and elsewhere, the neophyte underwent a series of physical and psychological trials through which he proved his strength and readiness for spiritual rebirth. And I guess at this point, we should state what we really mean when we say spirit. I'm sure you can imagine that there are a lot of ways that religions and philosophies around the world have interpreted and defined this word. Over the years, many of us may have refined our own understanding and definition as well. Theosophically, spirit is who and what we really are. Pure, eternal spirit is your real self, your essential nature, the highermost part of your being. Spirit is impersonal, formless, and not an individualized thing. There is not a different spirit for each person. Spirit is one and shines over all. Just as the one sun shines over everybody on this earth. My spirit is the same as your spirit. In fact, there is no such thing as my spirit, because spirit knows no separateness. It is what Hinduism calls Atman, the self, and it is literally one and the same in essence and identity as the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Self. As for physical rebirth, theosophy, we call that reincarnation. Today it is hard to believe, but true nonetheless, that until about 130 years ago, hardly anyone in the Western world had heard of reincarnation or knew anything about it. This hadn't always been the case, as a belief in reincarnation had flourished in the West in ages past, and had even been part of early Christianity until it was officially declared heretical by the Church in the 6th century AD. After that point, the concept of reincarnation vanished almost entirely from Western consciousness until it was reintroduced with an Eastern flavor by Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical movement, alongside other distinctly Eastern teachings such as karma and the oneness and divinity of all life. Reincarnation, in fact, means the same thing as re-embodiment and rebirth. It is the human soul returning to the earth again and again and taking up residence each time in a new physical body in order to continue the soul's progressive journey of inner evolution, advancement, development, and unfoldment. Death is not the end, and birth is not the beginning. The nature of each body in which the soul reincarnates is according to our own deeds and needs. In the words of the Upanishads, which are the foundational scriptures of Hindu philosophy, our deeds of the past have determined the body, the outer shell which we have to put up with for this present lifetime, and it is also the most fitting and suitable body to help meet the soul's needs for its inner evolution, development, and the learning of its lessons in this life. Well, there you have a small glimpse of karma. Karma literally means action and deed. In the ancient Sanskrit language of India, it is the law of cause and effect, action and reaction, sequence and consequence. We are always setting causes in motion. Every moment, through our every act, our every word, and even our every thought. For every cause set in motion, there is a corresponding and correlative effect which comes back. This is the way the universe maintains its harmony, balance, and equilibrium. Theosophy states that karma and reincarnation are the two most vitally important spiritual concepts for humanity to accurately understand. Karma and reincarnation are inextricably linked with each other. You can't have one without the other. It is obvious that one single lifetime is by no means long enough to reap the full effects of every cause we have set in motion during any lifetime. It is also apparent that some of the aspects and circumstances of our current lifetime do not have their origins in the current lifetime, but seemingly in the distant past. Physical incarnation itself is a karmic effect, since one of the main reasons we reincarnate is in order to deal with our past karma. To have a proper understanding of karma, a person must also accept and believe in reincarnation. To have a proper understanding of reincarnation, a person must also accept and believe in karma. It is the law of self-created destiny. In the past, you created your present, and in the present, you are creating your future. The seed sacrifices itself in order that a plant may grow. The plant life produces the flower, which has to die if the fruit is to follow. And within the fruit is the seed for perpetual immortality. Slowly but surely, the idea must take root in men's mind that death is an important stage which marks the destruction of form and the regeneration of spirit in a better form. Apart from the idea of resurrection and the second birth, this spring festival shows us how death is always followed by life as spring follows winter in ever-ending succession. The practical value for us of this idea is that it shows that there is in us an entity who can enter, leave, and re-enter the body, that in fact we are twofold beings. The outer body of flesh, the inner is the Christ. All evolution is for the purpose of bringing to birth, in matter form, the Christ within. Therefore, it is possible for each of us to be resurrected, to be reborn. This body personality we prize and nurture is but the sepulcher which hides the glory of Christ. The door is closed by the stone of matter, which prevents the Christ spirit from manifesting itself, and the passions crucify the Christ. The scripture says, "I stand at the door and knock," referring to the Christ being locked out of our heart. So Easter is about bringing forth our resurrecting the Christ within us. To do this, we need to work on cleansing the temple of the personality while maintaining consciousness all the time of this duality, which is us. In closing, a couple words from Buddha. Each morning, we are born again. What we do today is what matters most. So once again, the topic for today is physical and spiritual rebirth.
to make this statement, one has to therefore assume that there is something that's reborn. There's something eternal about all of us. In every human being, there is that eternal nature. It is what reincarnates from age to age. That spring is a reminder to humanity of his true nature. That we are reborn day after day, season after season. But we have to assume we are eternal. We may not remember our past lives. In fact, we have enough to worry about in these lives. That we have lived so many times that we have experienced everything that needs to be experienced. Our problem is that to conquer this world of matter, one must conquer his own passions and desires. One must quiet the mind, center the mind, and give up all works for any selfish reason. But do that which needs to be done without any consideration of oneself.
Nothing seems to go the way I planned. Why do I have to keep coming back?
Why is it always about you?
Because it's all I've got.
That's it. And the fact is that because it is about us, we are given opportunity after opportunity to bring back into harmony that which we've taken out of harmony. So the rebirth gives us that opportunity. We may not remember consciously, but we have a memory, a soul memory. And all those higher aspirations and deeds and love unconditionally for humanity, for however we can expand it, are eternal. So as we build upon those eternal ideas, we can carry them from life to life. And thanks to the Catholic Church, they have, as much as they have destroyed of the ancient symbols, they have glorified many of them. These are ancient symbols that are used that don't belong to any religion. They harken back to the antiquity of man. You know, we look at Hinduism. The egg is a profound symbol. Profound. Have you thought about it yourself? Looking at an egg with no outside influence, it transforms itself inside of this shell. And when it's large enough, it breaks the shell and comes out. What a divine mystery. And why else would humanity look at that and be amazed? And if we look at the egg, it's the Hindus have the Hirangarbha, the universal egg of which all of humanity came. Kalahansa, who lays the golden egg of life. So the egg is a symbol that for us to ponder.
But there is one outside influence on the egg, and that is heat.
Heat.
And that is what is the greatest influence on anyone that's seeking spiritual knowledge. It's not so much seeing the light as feeling the heat.
Yes. Well,
the light comes later.
Yes, the light, but definitely the heat. We feel the heat because in conversation about these ideas, it creates heat. People become uncomfortable because it is not an idea which they have held or do understand. And when you call someone's beliefs into question, they become disturbed. Very. The gentleman in the corner.
We looked out the window, and the lilac bushes bloomed, the tulip tree, all the wonderful plants, whereas about 60 to 90 days ago, it was desolate out there, brown, the signs of the death of the plants from last year. Could we have an explanation of how that takes place within us, or what we see is a demonstration? If we think about it, if we go to nature, can explain how growth takes place, improvement, death, and then, as you said, rebirth.
Well, the reason this is such a universal holiday is because it can be observed all over the world, well, in the Western Hemisphere, that this vernal equinox, which is a certain point in the sky, a certain degree of access to the globe, so that every year this access is the same. That's why in many ancient temples, there was a little hole in the ceiling, and that on the vernal equinox, a light shone through that hole, but only on that day. And as was spoken before, that this was one of the rites of initiation, is that the true understanding of this holiday, or of this event, it really is an event. The axis of the earth is changing, and we're in a state of flux. So what happens is our days become longer. Well, we are told December 21st, the winter solstice, that we are to plant a seed within our nature. Make a promise to ourselves and plant that seed deep within ourselves at the beginning of the year. And then, lo and behold, if one was true and meaningful, those seeds begin to sprout in the spring. A wise man uses this season to uplift himself, to go with the wave, with the current of energy. Let it lift you up, because we see it lifting many people up. But some are confused that they think it's the material world that is lifting them up. No, it's their spiritual nature that's lifting them up. That, hey, I'm here. And this is what we're here for. We're here for the spirit. And to ever discover it so that we can make this earth a place for all to live in harmony. It's not now, but it's off into the future. Yes?
Well, that's the heat that was mentioned. It said that the astral life of the earth is young and strong.
Yes.
Between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. But we were thinking, we all always forget, every one of us here in incarnation started out as an egg.
Yes. Yes.
We don't look for these symbols as meaningful for me.
Yes. Well, the idea of the egg is very, very sacred. HBB talks about it in detail in the Secret Doctrine, and traces the antiquity of this symbol, and that it is found coming up within groups of people, you know, in Turkey and Bulgaria and in Poland. They paint eggs. It's a very ancient ritual, but no one knows where it came from. They know when it approximately appeared, but it's within our nature. It's embedded within our psyche. That the cross, another ancient symbol that was borrowed by the Christians, but Hinduism has a god, Vithoba, who is crucified. They have him in the air, but with nails through his hands and feet, three nails, which symbolizes something. So there's great symbology in all of this, but it's the symbol for us. If Jesus on the cross is how we have nailed our spiritual nature to matter, that we have sacrificed our lives for matter, we work for matter, our lives are just enveloped as we think we need to survive, but we come to realize survival is only so much of our life. There's a part of our life that where we have to live the life that we want. Otherwise, it will never manifest itself. That's why being a theosophist is more than just coming here and having friendships and having acquaintances and sharing in thought. Sharing in thoughts, because from ideas come actions and words. So HPB wrote much of what she wrote. She wanted to make us think. The great scourge of the United States, that we no longer think. We accept and are led around. So part of the problem with the world we live in now is that we do not have free thinkers that examine life on their own basis, on the basis of three fundamental ideas. And the morality of life comes from that. It's not from what someone tells me is moral. Yes.
You know, we see it also in the animal kingdom at this time of year, the bringing forth of new life.
Yes.
The spring is the time for animals.
Yeah. Well, that's also why the hare or the rabbit is always found in this time of year, because it's so prolific. And it's spring is about bringing forth more life. Procreation, that this is a renewal, and you have to consider what is being renewed. The body ought not, you know, one day or one season is not going to renew this old machine, but it's what's inside of us that needs to be renewed. The idea that we are eternal. And this is one of the signposts along our journey, because we are said to be the eternal pilgrims. This is just another reminder of who we are. Who we are. We're not the personality. We're not the personality. We're not this pain. We're not this suffering. We're not these ideas that we hold. We are one. We are a unity. But there are ideas as well. But we hold ideas that bind us together, that do not separate us.
So, is it true that the whole allegory of the death and the resurrection, the rolling away of the stone, the 3 days, are these all, we've heard that these are analogous to the process of initiation when one is moving into real knowledge in a sense?
Well, this knowledge that we talk about openly in public was secret. And it took many long years of, we would say, self-denial of pleasures and of work and of study and finding solutions to the problems of life. We are stumped by the pure fact of why are we here and what are we doing and what's going on and how come things are like they are. We have 10 million questions, but the answer lies within us. It's through our desires, our wants, those high ideals that we have, or the ideals that we have. We're moving. It's told by us in the philosophy that we are moving in space. We are moving in space now, but we're moving forward. And we're, as all life, is trying to return to its source. And man has the divine ability to choose, which makes of him a god. So, in Easter, we can choose to be reminded of our divine nature and that we do not die. We pass from one consciousness to another. And because of our divine nature, we gather around us all the elements of this physical world into bodies that have intelligence, that have knowing, that are conscious. Think about it. We do this, not without the help of all of life. We are not alone. It's through sacrifice, as was mentioned. All the lower kingdom sacrifices themselves for the next kingdom. Everything sacrifices themselves to man. And man won't sacrifice himself to anything. There is where our problem lies. We have to sacrifice ourselves to the all, to everything, because we are not separated from anything. That is the great mystery of life. What we do to one, we do to everyone. In the very back,
not to be able to understand the meaning of cooperation and working together. been involved. Where did that mistake come in? Have we judged ourselves correctly? Do we take time to look into nature and its beauty and its order? Where's the fault?
The fault lies in us. The fault lies in us. Do we stop and reflect? Do we make choices that are considered, that are weighed? Do we live a life of meaning? Do we take responsibility for life around ourselves? How this all manifests is really of our own doing. To make theosophy a living power in our life, you cannot be told how to do that. You must discover for yourself how to make your life meaningful. There's always that idea in our head that we're separate. We see ourselves as separate. It seems to be a reality, but it's the only the reality that exists in this material world. We had grandparents that said, well, when I die, I'll be closer to you than you think, because of love. There's a whole other world that is invisible to us. And it's that invisible germ that explodes within the egg and creates life. That's created us. That created many, many creatures. You know, there's symbolism that has been drawn out, like the cross within the circle is a symbol for the third race when they were oviformed, when they were in egg shape. The cross outside of the circle is the fourth race. But that doesn't mean anything. It just means that everything is a symbol. It's a symbol. And that many hold the symbol sacred by not eating it. The Egyptian priest would not eat eggs. Many Buddhists will not eat eggs because of this great mystery. Yes?
Sometimes we think you can use a quote as a symbol, and you just carry it with you for the day and use it. The one you read for today was, be kind to everyone, not because they're nice, but because you are.
Yes. Yes, well, that seems to be the curse of the age, too. We're so concerned with what everyone else thinks. We don't freely give, because sometimes we are ridiculed for being too nice. Or we think we become vulnerable to those that are looking for nice people. Yes.
We still have to be nice.
Yes.
No matter how much it hurts.
Well, that's interesting. It hurts.
It can.
Yeah, I guess it can.
It can hurt.
Yeah. Truly.
Until we finally get over it.
Yeah.
That's practice. If we do it enough, then we won't feel the hurt anymore. We'll
there
just
you go.
Say, that person is just maybe not having a good day, or
yeah. So what's the hurt?
What's the hurt? That's the personality.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, and we all have developed a personality. Otherwise, we wouldn't have gotten this far. But it's just one needs to control it. Yes.
Well, the hurt is stretching, whether it's emotional, mental, physical. And remember, people pay good money to make a coach force them to hurt and stretch to gain muscles.
They pay a coach?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, my. Martin? Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. Didn't mean to do that. Yes. Question.
I think that I'll never see a poem that's written as a treat. The treat is just leaping on. What tradition does the
human, can you speak up, please?
What position does the human being play in this drama of life in the universe?
What position do we play in this drama of the universe? Well, we're the conductor. Because the universe is of our making. Now, the universe is beyond us, but the universe is that little world in which we live in. Day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, that's our universe. And that is of our own creation. And in the long run, everything is of our own creation. We've had a part in all of this. That's why the sense of responsibility must be taken up. Because none of us are free from responsibility for what's going on today. Our problem is we don't know what to do about it. Well, the only thing we can do at first is to change our attitude, change our point of reference, and the idea of cooperation rather than competition goes a long way. They're finding in science, that the social sciences, that in the workplace and in other endeavors, that cooperation is far more productive than competition. But things are as they are for many reasons. But it doesn't mean that they are right or that they are wrong. But the times, they are changing. And we need to be a part of the change that we want to see in the world. So, by talking about these ideas, by keeping these ideas before the public, it gives everyone a chance to investigate. And nothing that is said in this building or from this podium can be taken as the gospel truth. You have to take it and digest it within your own nature and check, test, and verify if it makes any sense. Does it hold any reason? Does it hold any continuity? Because once you begin understanding this philosophy, the smallest idea is found all through the philosophy. This idea of reincarnation is found throughout the philosophy. Karma is found throughout the philosophy. It's expressed in millions of different ways. It's a thread that is found throughout this great teaching. So what one learns, ever so small, is a piece. And as we get older, we keep on putting pieces and pieces together. And hopefully, we will gather together the whole. But we need to embed it in our higher nature, and we do this by practical use of these ideas. Living the life as a theosophist. You know, it's so hard that we live in a world that is Christian, is Jewish, is Muslim. There's all these different religions that separate us. We are not separate. We are not separate. This is just an illusion. These are just ideas that separate us. Nothing more, just ideas. And as soon as we can free up the minds of our neighbors and of our friends to at least look and investigate your true nature, all this makes sense. It makes sense. We've all looked for the truth, and here we are, because nothing made sense. Nothing included everything and everyone. Nothing was all inclusive. Nothing, nothing. So we ended up here.
Our declaration is a great document that we have, that we don't know of any document that predated it spoke about all being all inclusive, having no distinctions of sex, religion, caste, color, or condition. And condition means anything. Anybody, whoever, it covers everything. So it's completely unconditional acceptance and love, no matter where you're coming from.
Yes, it's a free expression. A free expression of one's ideas. And we become confused. Our ideas become confused. But we accept the shortcomings of each other, because none of us are perfect. As long as our heart is willing and our temperament is mild, we can go far. We can learn much. This time of year, when it was thought that the rabbits, the hares, the night before laid eggs out in the yard, and the children would wake up in the morning and trying to find them. Or when the Slavic people painted eggs of different colors and beauty. Well, they represent each of us. We are colorful eggs. But that's all we are eggs in potential. We are still within an egg. We still need to burst out of it and into the world of reality. We live in the world of illusion, and we struggle there. But we know that there's a higher life, and there's a higher body, and that the struggle that we are having now are of our own ideas that we hold to be the truth. That's all, just ideas. We change our ideas, we change our world. It's as simple as that. Just change one idea. You'll be amazed at what it does. That's why when we study theosophy, we're looking and think, have I changed? Is anything changed? Is anything different? Life isn't like that. Life changes very slowly. It's a slow, even process. And we are changing. Sometimes we never see it, but those around us feel it, and then we see it. So it's not so much how much we've advanced, it's how much our heart has widened to accept everyone who has problems and who is different and who is struggling. Yes?
Well, it was just said that in certain ways we are living in our own egg as we try to grow through this thing we call life. So if there are those who have perfected themselves, that we call Mahatmas or masters, and they're so trying to affect the world for good, why aren't they here cracking our eggs for us and getting us going?
Yes, well that's a very good analogy, because that's what would happen if they would come. they would crack all our eggs because we wouldn't understand them. We're living in a time of polarity. They would either be, I got a fly up here that loves me. We would either hunt them as devils or worship them as gods.
Or hang them on a cross.
Or hang them on a cross. You know, there's the reason for anything is us. Would we accept someone who came in here and said, this is how it is? You know, would we accept it? Do we accept these ideas when we hear them? Or we just say, nah. That's why we are told to check, test, and verify everything that comes out of anyone's mouth up here or any conversation you may have with anyone. That's how you become smarter. That's how you become more discriminating. Back.
There's a metaphor for the lack of a master helping a beginner, and it's the story of a butterfly. A man came across a cocoon, and the butterfly was struggling to get out, so he breathed on it, giving it heat, and the butterfly came out and fell dead on the ground because it was the working its way out of the cocoon that built the muscles that would allow it to live and to fly. So why should a master help us when it would defeat us?
Yeah. Yes. The same analogy with a chick breaking its shell. If you interrupt that and help it, it chances of survival are very slim. So yes, there must be effort and struggle and heat generated by us. I mean, to take up an idea that has been the antithesis of what everyone around us believes creates heat. It creates heat. So I know often many of us study and study and study because we're afraid to talk about it in public because of all the heat it creates. But then we come to learn that that's what we need. We need the heat. We need the friction. Otherwise, we can't grow. We can't change. If it was too easy, no one would do it. No one. Because there's no challenge. Now, we leave you with these ideas that theosophy is a challenge. And Easter is a very sacred and holy holiday. But it is not Christians that own it. It's a reminder that the pagans, the Egyptians, the Phoenicians, all the ancient civilizations had the egg. And the egg symbolized that unknown divinity that generates itself within that egg without any outside influence other than heat. Well, we hope you found these ideas to be helpful. We'd like to remind you that all activities of this lodge are sustained through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, and all are welcome to participate. Meeting adjourned. Is that what it was, survival?
Nice job. I'm not even at my daughter's.
Not my lot of activity this morning.
Huh?
I don't have activity.
I don't know.
No, but it's like,
I was just telling
for those that were here, it was good.